This is Tamara with the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, June 17th. Let's start with the front page. A community column from Donette Beckett in Decatur. It will go on forever. And we have a photo. Mark Scranton, Vice President of Friends of the Lincoln Square Theater, shaking hands with Donna and Dan Hardy. As President Lavelle Hunt, thanks Missy Batman, Chief Operating Officer of the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation, after being surprised by a $300,000 gift for the venue in Decatur on Monday, June 15th. Hardy Family Donation establishes fund for Lincoln Square Theater. Dan Hardy has a special place in his heart for downtown Decatur's historic Lincoln Square Theater. Back in the 50s, I started coming here, he said. My dad would bring me here. The family would eat at the Chuck Wagon Diner on the corner of William and Main Streets, then watch James Bond or Beatles movies at the theater. This just means a lot to me, Hardy said. Because of Hardy's generosity, the Lincoln Square Theater will benefit from a $300,000 endowment fund through the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation. It will go on forever, he said. Although he said he was speechless when they announced the donation, Lavelle Hunt, president of Friends of the Historic Lincoln Square Theater, wasn't surprised by the donors. With what you guys have already done for the theater, what you've done for the community, I can't be more honored to accept that, he said. Hardy and his wife Donna have often contributed to the community in the past. They do it very quietly, said Natalie Beck, CEO of the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation. Along with several philanthropic events, Hardy helped bring the boat races back to Lake Decatur with the Hardys Race for the Lake. In February, the couple contacted Missy Batman, Chief Operating Officer of the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation, informing the foundation about their desire to make a donation. We were looking at different ways their contribution could benefit the community, she said. While they were considering a focus, they had discussed the Illinois Gives Tax Credit Program in Central Illinois. Through the program, individuals who make donations to permanent endowments receive a 25% Illinois state income tax credit, while creating long-term charitable resources for the community. It must benefit the people and the places in the state of Illinois, Batman said. I know that 100 years from now, when we're all gone, the only ones here are the spirits that stay. Every year, a grant will be made in Donna and Dan's name. It's their legacy. The Lincoln Square Theater is more than 100 years old, with a continual need for repairs and updates. Other donations and gifts have helped a few recent projects, including replacing the stage curtains and adding a new sound system. The building located north of the theater will be utilized as a new box office with a larger area for relaxing. We've got all the plans done for it, Hunt said. We were just waiting for the funding. With the generosity his father instilled in him, Hardy continues the family philanthropy. We've just always loved this place, he said. And it shows, Hunt said. And it's haunted, too, Hardy said. From local government, indicator, Tony Reed. Decatur Plots Comprehensive Plan Update. City Council members signed off Monday night on a combined $323,000 project to draft a plan and overhaul local guidelines to steer Decatur through whatever challenges the future can throw at it. But the several votes needed to pave the way to create the comprehensive plan covering everything from economic development, housing, transport, and neighborhood revitalization didn't sail by without getting some flack, however. A finished planning document, which will be combined with an overhaul of city ordinances on key issues such as zoning regulations, isn't scheduled to be delivered to the council until 2028. That had some at Monday's meeting wondering whether Decatur can afford to hang around that long, awaiting its roadmap into tomorrow. Pressing issues like the prospect of data center developments and the need for new and better housing were seen by some critics as challenges demanding quicker responses. I'm a little bit concerned that we really need action now and not wait 2 years to have our zoning ordinance adjusted, said Councilman David Horn. So why 2 years? City Manager Melissa Hahn said a comprehensive review of city ordinances just takes time to get it right. But she said no planning applications for something much needed, like much needed new developments, would be delayed or held up while the review of city ordinances and overall future planning policy went ahead. The problem with housing, she said, is that no developer is coming to the council bearing new residential development proposals. Residential developers, please reach out. Call us, said Hahn. We would love to have those conversations. There was much public conversation earlier in the meeting about the possibility of a data center arriving in Decatur, with passionate speakers both for and against the prospect of one. Horn wondered what would happen if such a data center project suddenly appeared on the horizon while the city was still busy trying to figure out its overall planning approach. The city manager again assured him the city government would not be paralyzed while it contemplates the shape of the future. I don't want anybody to think we're in a holding pattern, because we're not, she added. But she also said, as far as data centers go, we've not had any proposals or developments brought to the city for consideration. The city council adopted its last comprehensive plan back in 2009 and hasn't taken a fresh look at its zoning ordinance guidelines since 2002. The city manager, in a briefing memo to council members, said it's time to acknowledge the world has moved on and demands a new overarching plan to help the city cope. Decatur has experienced significant changes in housing, economic development, transportation, demographics, and community priorities, Hahn added. City staff have identified the need to update the comprehensive plan to establish a shared vision for the community's future and provide a roadmap for growth, redevelopment, infrastructure investment, housing, economic development, neighborhood revitalization, and land use decisions. The council accepted the recommendation of Hahn and Lacey Elsie, Decatur's Director of Economic and Community Development, to hire specialist consultants McKenna Associates Incorporated to do the detailed planning work. This will include getting input from the public with events like a community brainstorm workshop aimed at getting broad input on the community's goals for their city, according to a detailed work schedule already put forward by McKenna. The firm plans to get the ball rolling in July with a two-day kickoff and orientation tour as it begins looking at what needs fixing and improving to move the city forward. The comprehensive plan will cost $200,000, but will be funded through grants. The city ordinance overhaul will cost another $133,000 and will be paid for by city taxpayers. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said taking time to get the comprehensive plan and ordinance review right was important, and she wanted to make sure citizens got their chance to speak. It's critically important that we get input from the public, she said, and that takes a lot of time, organization, and logistics. We want to make sure the public has the full ability to comment on various parts of the plan. Now continuing with local news from page A2. From Tony Reed, Indicator. Woman sought after car fire. Police are anxious to talk to a Decatur woman whose boyfriend's sport utility vehicle was engulfed in fire shortly after she climbed out of it following an argument. Firefighters put the flames out around 7:19 p.m. Friday evening as the large vehicle burned in the parking lot outside of the Decatur Driver Services Facility in the 3100 block of North Woodford Street. The 24-year-old Decatur woman was seen grabbing property out of the SUV and then started running from it just as smoke and flames started to billow out, said Sergeant Brandon Rolfs with the Decatur Police Department. The vehicle was fully engulfed in fire, and the woman is being sought for the questioning about this. Rolfs said the SUV's male owner, who is also age 24 and lives in Decatur, said he has been in an on-and-off dating relationship with the woman for 7 years. He told police he had been driving the vehicle when the angry woman began pulling on the steering wheel and yelling at him. The driver had pulled into the parking lot and gotten out of the vehicle. Rolfs said the driver's uncle and several other family members had later shown up and tried to persuade the woman to also get out of the SUV, but she had refused. And when she did finally make her exit, the fire had broken out. The vehicle was totaled in the blaze, Rolfs added. Now from Donette Beckett, Indicator. Theater 7 to host auditions for Come From Away. The directors for Theater 7 are already preparing for next season. The local theater group will be hosting 2 days of open auditions for the musical Come From Away. Auditions will begin at 6:30 p.m. July 7th and 8th at Theater 7, located at 131 North Water Street in downtown Decatur. Actors will not need to attend both days of auditions. Those auditioning should be prepared to sing a one-minute song that will showcase their range and abilities. A pianist will be available to play sheet music. Music with no vocals can be added, can be used as accompaniment through a track connected to the person's phone. The audition will also include a cold reading of the script. Be prepared to learn a short dance sequence. The show dates will be September 11th through 13th. Rehearsals will begin in July. Come From Away is the real-life story of the people of Gander, Newfoundland, and the almost 7,000 airline passengers who were forced to land when United States airspace was closed on September 11, 2001. For more information, visit theater7.org or its Facebook page. Now from our opinion page, Keeping Coal. Our first column from Rich Nolan. Nolan's president and CEO of the National Mining Association. He wrote this for InsideSources.com. White House right to invest in plants. The Trump administration's embrace of coal power is a timely and essential response to a three-headed energy emergency. The U.S. is facing an electricity supply crisis shaped by rapidly eroding grid reliability, soaring power demand, and ballooning prices. The coal fleet is critical to tackling all three. The North American Electric Reliability Corporation, the nation's grid watchdog, has warned that approaching power supply shortfalls are a five-alarm fire, with more than half the country facing significant blackout risks over the next decade. Driving the crisis has been the loss of on-demand power plants, casualties of broken power markets, renewable energy mandates and punishing regulations, and the sudden arrival of exploding electricity demand. New manufacturing facilities, millions of electric vehicles, and the overnight emergence of data centers, with the power needs of entire cities, will overwhelm power supplies. U.S. power demand is expected to increase by about 75% by 2050. The nation needs far more electricity, and it needs it fast. Skyrocketing utility bills, up 40% since 2020, also reflect the crisis as markets try to incentivize new supply. Massive utility spending on new power capacity and energy infrastructure is slamming ratepayers. The administration, much to its credit, is confronting the crisis with the urgency it demands. It embraced coal as a key piece of the answer. The administration rightly recognizes that the first step in addressing the supply crisis is to stop the loss of essential generating capacity. A regulatory reset is allowing coal to compete again. The administration now is making targeted investments to upgrade existing plants, enabling them to achieve greater efficiency, extend their operating lives, and produce more power when it's needed most. This strategy accomplishes three important goals. It helps stabilize the supply of power in markets where the loss of further coal capacity could turn a deeply difficult situation into an untenable one. The White House says it has supported and saved more than 40 gigawatts of coal power, enough to power 25 million homes. It immediately puts more reliable, on-demand power into the grid. That's important because as power demand surges, a global logjam is slowing the delivery of natural gas turbines. And the construction of more nuclear power plants is years away. Other additions to the power supply are dominated by renewable resources, which don't produce energy continuously, so they may not supply the power grid when it needs it most. It preserves important energy options in cost-effective ways. Consider the role coal played in holding down energy costs last year. Wholesale U.S. natural gas prices in 2025 jumped 56%, adding billions of dollars in costs to U.S. consumers. This was a significant increase, but would have been larger if not for U.S. coal. Utilities were able to ramp up coal generation in response, providing a shock absorber to rising natural gas prices. Having that option saved U.S. consumers tens of billions of dollars in otherwise higher energy costs. Preserving and even enhancing coal plants is a very well-made investment. The need for fuel options and security are now driving energy policy as the world faces another energy crisis, the second in 4 years. Nations across Asia and Europe are leaning on coal to shore up energy supplies and reduce costs. Annual global coal demand is rising fast. The administration isn't bucking a global trend. Its embrace of coal is right in line with it. The U.S. has the world's largest coal reserves and a dynamic coal industry. Investing in U.S. coal capacity is not merely sound energy policy, it is recognition of alarming realities. With electricity demand soaring, prices climbing, and reliability deteriorating, it would be energy policy malpractice not to embrace U.S. coal. We'll read the second opinion in the second half of the paper. Please stay tuned. Again, from local and national news, Decatur launches studies to expand treatment plant, from Tony Reed in Decatur. When it comes to water, the city of Decatur is usually riding the crest of a wave. But that doesn't mean it isn't going to need a whole lot more of the stuff. And city council members voted Monday night to splash more than $919,000 on two projects aimed at keeping future supplies flowing abundantly. First up was approval of paying out $722,000 to hire the Burns and McDonald Engineering Company to draft an expansion plan for Decatur's South Water Treatment Plant. City Manager Melissa Hahn said city water treatment capacity has come a long way since the first water treatment plant was pumping out 9 million gallons a day back in 1913. In 1989, the old South Water Treatment Plant was replaced by the facility at the current site, which has a maximum day capacity of 36 million gallons a day, expandable to 54, she told the council in a briefing memo. Over the next 5 to 10 years, anticipated development could add 9 to 12 million gallons a day of demand, which would use the remaining available capacity at the South Water Treatment Plant. In 2025, the plant's maximum day production was approximately 24, which leaves just 12 of additional maximum day capacity for future economic growth. For the water system to continue supporting economic development, it is necessary to develop an expansion plan now. Burns and McDonald will earn their $722,000 fee by crunching the numbers and doing the engineering work to boost output. The firm will also look at enhancing the performance of water treatment methods and hardening the water treatment plant against the risk of cyber and physical attacks. And looking ahead to where all this expanded supply of treated water might be coming from, the council also voted Monday to spend $197,446 hiring specialist firm Intera to project future city water demand while assessing alternative supply options to help Decatur cope with rising water use and drought. In many ways, Hahn told the council, Decatur is still sitting pretty. The average amount of water flowing over the Lake Decatur Dam is 470 million gallons a day, some 14 times the average daily customer thirst for water, for the past 6 years at 33. Records for the past 100 years show a consistent pattern of rainfall in the second quarter of each year and sufficient quantity to end every drought, Hahn added in a briefing note. True to form, Lake Decatur came out of the 25-26 drought before most of the reservoirs in the region. Previous studies done by Intera showed that responding to a drought worse than anything previously seen in Decatur history would require some 3,100 million gallons of additional supply to be on tap to keep up with water usage averaging 38.5 million gallons a day. Hahn said 1,670 million gallons of the additional supply needs has already been achieved by recent dredging operations in the lake. And with the completion of other projects to boost supplies, the shortfall required to cover a nightmare drought has been reduced to a 550 million gallon gap in needed supplies. Intera's job now is to look at how best to cover that while assessing the most effective use of additional water sources the city has on tap, such as the Vulcan sand and gravel pit in Harristown and a farm purchased in DeWitt County that could supplement the city's existing well field along Friends Creek. On the demand side, there has been excellent progress in attracting development to Decatur with increased water use, and it is prudent to address how the city can remain drought resilient through additional alternative water supplies, Hahn added. No council members had much of an argument to any of that, although Councilman David Horn wondered how the city's water system would cope with increased demand from the coming Broadwing Energy Center overlaid with rising usage from the Fuyao Glass America factory, which is planning to step up production. Robert Weil, the city's water production manager, says the city's water production can cope with potential jumps in demand on the horizon right now, but it does need to lay in plans for more capacity for the long term and to fend off future droughts. That's why we are doing the study, so that we will be ready for that eventuality, he added. One surprise Weil dropped during the discussion was that the Illinois Department of Natural Resources had previously rated the city's water supply system as being at risk of not being able to cope with demand, but Weil said that rating was applied before the city had carried out extensive dredging of Lake Decatur, which had significantly boosted its capacity, and implemented various other improvements to enhance supply. Now, that rating, I should add, hasn't been looked at in quite a long time, so they haven't accounted for the things we've already done since that rating came out, Weil said. And you know, with state budget limits, they often will publish something and not update it for a long period of time. So we might have to make the case that, hey, we really should be adequate now. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf agreed. That rating is probably not anywhere close to accurate, she said. From our food page today, B5, we have a recipe for a pasta salad that tastes even better the next day from Robin Miller. This salad's great for entertaining, as it's easy to double or triple to serve a crowd. It's prep-ahead friendly. You can make pasta salad up to 2 days in advance, because it's better the second day, and simply store the salad in an airtight container in the refrigerator. Some of the ingredients: spiral pasta, bell peppers, mozzarella, hard salami, tomatoes, olives, red onion, Parmesan cheese, and an Italian dressing. We also have a classic potato salad as a side dish. The potato salad involves new or baby potatoes, cider vinegar, sour cream, mayonnaise, Dijon mustard, black pepper, a half a pound of bacon, cooked until chewy, crisp, and chopped, green onions, celery, pimentos, and chopped fresh parsley. For the complete list of ingredients and instructions, please see the in-print version of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, June 17th, page B5. Today in history, 1925, Allied powers and the League of Nations signed the Geneva Protocol, which reaffirmed prior bans on using poisonous gas in warfare and added the prohibitions of bacteriological weapons. On this day in 1940, England sent the liner RMS Lancastria to evacuate more British troops as well as women and children from France, 2 weeks after it started withdrawing from Dunkirk. Caught unprotected off the port of Saint-Nazaire, the ship was sunk by German planes, the attack lighting a resulting fuel spill. The estimated death toll was between 4,000 and 7,000, more than the losses of the Titanic and the Lusitania combined. Now from our nutritionist, Barbara Intermill, tips for GLP-1 users. We noticed it right away in 2005 when the first GLP-1 medication for people with diabetes hit the market. I was part of a team of registered dietitians and certified diabetes educators at the time. Our patients were not exactly thrilled when they learned this new medication required 2 daily injections with a needle, but they were over the moon when they experienced the main side effect, weight loss. As word of this new class of diabetes medication spread, many of my overweight patients who did not have diabetes wished they could use it to help lose weight. They couldn't. Fast forward a couple of decades, this particular category of drugs, known as glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonists, or GLP-1, is still used to treat type 2 diabetes, but this same class of medications has now been approved to treat obesity as well. For example, Wegovy, a different dose of the same drug as the diabetes medication Ozempic.
Along with weight loss come some side effects. Rapid weight loss associated with these drugs has caused some experts to coin the term Ozempic face to describe what happens when a person loses a significant amount of facial fat. Wrinkles become more apparent, eyes appear to sink in, and cheeks begin to sag. Slower but steady weight loss can sometimes prevent this. Rapid weight loss also can cause weakness due to a sudden loss of muscle mass. To prevent this, the body needs a daily intake of protein and a steady habit of exercise. Most experts recommend 20 to 30 grams of protein at each meal or 3 times a day. For perspective, one egg contains about 7 grams of protein. A tablespoon of protein powder provides about 16 grams of protein. And a small 3-ounce portion of meat, fish, or poultry supplies about 21 grams of protein. And don't forget, we also get protein in beans, nuts, vegetables, and grain-based foods. GLP-1 meds also slow digestion, so plenty of dietary fiber and fluids is recommended to avoid constipation. Find fiber in plant foods such as fruit, vegetables, whole grains, beans, and nuts. These drugs work well because they reduce hunger and increase a feeling of fullness after eating. That means every bite needs to count nutritionally. Precious bone mass can be lost, for example, if you skimp on calcium as you lose weight. Dairy foods like milk and yogurt provide this essential mineral. They are also a good source of high-quality protein to maintain muscle during weight loss. Bottom line, with any weight loss technique, nutrition really does matter. Barbara Intermill is a registered dietitian. You can email her at barbara@quintessentialnutrition.com. Now, hints from Heloise. Faster drying for hand-washed clothes. Dear Heloise, people have written to you with tips on how to dry clothes that you have hand-washed, usually while traveling. But there's one step that most people don't seem to know about. After you wash clothes, and I've read that using shampoo is generally better than soap for this purpose, wring them out as hard as you can, then roll them up in a towel. Most people might know about these steps, but the key next step is to then walk on the folded-up towel, flip it over, and walk on the other side as well. The body weight of walking on the towel really gets a great deal of moisture out of the clothing, and it dries much faster. I read about this tip several years ago, and we've used it frequently when we travel. Also, when trying to keep dish sponges clean, I also read many years ago just to put your sponge on the top rack of the dishwasher when you run it. It certainly helps clean and sanitize the sponge or dish cloth. Thanks for your hints. I've read your column since I was a little girl, and now I'm a grandmother. Susan in Charlottesville, Virginia. Freezing chips. I've been sealing my chips and crackers in bags, which I then put in the freezer. They last for months without going stale by using this method of storage. Gail L. in Hastings, Nebraska. Replacing glass windows. Dear Heloise, in regards to Jacqueline, who recently wrote about spots on a double pane window that wouldn't come off, I think the issue is that moisture has gotten between the two panes of glass. When insulating glass is manufactured, the airspace is filled with argon gas. Over time, mostly from unknown reasons, the seal will fail, the gas will escape, and the airspace gets filled with ambient air that contains moisture. Over time, the spots and discoloration will increase. The only option is to replace the glass. My comments come from 26 years of working in residential construction and 22 years as a licensed home inspector. John F. in Cazenovia, New York. On this date in history, in 1957, black people began boycotting stores in the city of Tuskegee, Alabama, in protest of state legislation that deprived them of municipal votes by placing their homes outside the city limits. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, June 17th. Please stay tuned.